5:157. I just discovered that for 15 months I've labored in error as to who wrote Acts. I had the idea it was Paul, undoubtedly because it deals with Paul. However, it was written by Luke, who also may have written Romans. I am sitting here slowly perceiving the importance of this. First off, the stunning manifestation of theological material in tears is virtually all except for the dream, from Acts. But the main point is that Luke was the beloved physician, as Paul calls him, and a highly literate Greek writer. Also, in one recent dream, my attention was called to a large section of the Bible, which, when I looked up the page numbers, was Luke's gospel from the Sermon on the Mount of Christ at the Mount of Transfiguration. Also, my vision of the man as saint or angel informing me was of a Greek. He wore a toga and greaves. He carried a huge clasped book, which he held with both arms affectionately. This wasn't Paul, a Greek physician and evangelist, one of the Gospelists. The EB says that Luke was a darn good theologian and that he was into Christian prophecy. He was no mere chronicler of events. I've been looking over Acts. It certainly is fluent. And he was a close friend of Paul. This fits my early dream, in which my friend Paul is holding up a book of prophecy, now obviously sections of the Bible, specifically the New Testament. If only I'd said plaintively to Father Rosh, "This man is a literate Greek, he's a physician, and has something to do with Acts." On the spot, it'd have been put together then and there. You cannot get any more precise than that. A class with one member, St. Luke. Luke lived a lot in Syria, a palm tree country, like what I saw in 275, his beloved homeland, his concept of springtime. I'm certain that no other early great Christian saint was a physician. This distinguishes St. Luke. Now to return to contemplation of the personality, which took me over in 374, the one who detested the aerosol sprays, etc. That was St. Luke. "Although I did not know who you were, I thank you. He found in heaven a friend," as Gray says. This was a meeting, which I can't convey to anyone, this helping hand. Was it because I worried about Lorraine? Or lit the candles? Why you came, I can understand a little. Why you left is another matter. The days are empty now. No friend speaks. The candles are all cold and dead, and about the rest, her, I know nothing. Days pass. Will you return?" I don't know how to write a poem to St. Luke, but there it is, the best I can do. For to scare the dead, let it turn out to be St. Luke, who shamanistically possessed him, a bridge thus established between 70 AD and our present. And the protag eventually discovers, through this assimilated inner contact, that St. Luke, and probably also the others of the original cadre of Christians, the inner circle of Christ's, is what we call, are you ready? A non-terrestrial, of magnificent power and authority and wisdom. I think plot-wise, the protag eventually learns, decides, that originally such men as St. Luke were ordinary humans, born of woman, etc., but became this through such possession of them by the Holy Spirit, which is to say their master, Christ, who was not an ordinary human being. And the purpose of this elevation comes through now, since our planet has had it, ecology-wise, due to our using up and destroying and polluting. This is a system to get some of us, as many as possible, translated out of here and hence saved. This is the true meaning of being saved, saved from the Holocaust. This, too, is the meaning of the now arriving parousia. I might add that what gives the non-terrestriality of Luke away to the protag are, e.g., the dreams in which the protag experiences himself, and man in general, as an animal among other animals, a sort of anthropological, biologist, naturalist viewpoint derived from Luke within him. He obtains Luke's standpoint, and it is off-Earth, the other end of the telescope view. What St. Luke has as vibes is a humorous attitude, a smiling, almost rollicking quality, except that he has ferocious dedication and drive to the cause of truth and righteousness, humor and zeal. And because of being a physician, he has a tender healing quality. It's an invasion from the past, contrived in the future, the time loop structure from off Earth, inside his and other people's head. It, the invader, just pops on inside him one day, and from then on, it occupies the right hemisphere of his mind, which was just waiting on standby for this. Personality of it a little like Lord Running Clam. Plot breakdown. Character before taken over. Possession. Then take over. Mystery as to who took him over. To solution. Lots of research. Social meaning. Who else has been taken over? Work in concert. Opposition. Who? The establishment? Character must decide where he stands. The hallucinations or establishment. Character decides for the Messiah, whom he encounters externally. Another person taken over. Final section. Reprise of 1st century AD. Christians versus Rome. But with different outcome, foreordained. End. The pale white light, where no shadows are, comes on. It is the Parousia. Ships, huge ones, begin to land. Character debates all the issues I debated, e.g., is it a spirit of a dead person? Is it a non-terrestrial? The Holy Spirit? Reincarnation? Major denouement is when he realizes that it is both, a non-T and the Holy Spirit. And I guess, in a sense, the spirit of a dead human, rather than either or. This exhaustion of categories of thought should be a major achievement in this novel. Rephrased, the quality of answers depends on the questions put. I have now finally read Arthur C. Clarke's Childhood's End. What I wanted to do was find out if any details resembled details of my 374 et al. Experience. Generally, no. All I can say is that his story is compatible with my experience. I mean, if my experience were so, his book could grow out of it, or if his book were true, my experience could grow out of it. It is almost a make, but not quite. Still, it is closer than any other system. If you view it as a system, and I think it is, a philosophy disguised as a novel. Not really disguised, but more stated. One detail is right on. The idea he expresses rather cryptically about time. That it is more complex than we realize. And then he springs on us the idea of memories about the future, reverse time. In this one respect, a detail fits into exact, precise, and major place. It isn't conclusive, but, in a fuzzy way, my structure and his are identical. If you just blur or joggle them a little, they will harmonize. Of most value would be to take his novel and to approach my experience strictly in the kind of SF terms he uses, where religious symbolism and experience are subsumed by modern SF non-terrestrial explanations rather than vice versa. If I did this, I would say, 1. We are not only being watched, we are being controlled, but don't know it. They remain beyond our threshold of vision. 2. They work for a higher purpose, one we can't understand, but which fits our concepts of spiritual, moral purposes. 3. We are instruments, therefore, of an invisible spiritual force, which causes us to grow and develop in certain arranged directions. 4. Some of us are either part of their race or can be elevated to their level, as they work through these individuals. 5. The probable reason for their concealment is our evil qualities. We cannot be trusted individually or collectively, man qua beast. 6. A critical moment has approached or is approaching. This is a unique period in their work, therefore in our use purpose. 7. The extent of camouflage and delusion induced in us is extraordinary in amount and degree. I'm not sure these SF concepts mean much. In terms of SF yield, this is about it as far as what my 374 experience gives. This is why I reject an SF type of explanation. A theological one yields so much more. The above simply do not explain. They're paltry, and no more than the convention of the moment. What is needed is a harmonization of theology and SF without a reduction of the former to the latter, as Clark does. It looks, what he does, like an improvement, but it is not. The devil really is a non-terrestrial race, you see? And yet, what is extraordinarily significant is that the two modes of interpretation which I hover most between are SF and theology, which surely tells us something about SF we otherwise might not know. The two must be related in some important way. I've recovered some buried memories of about 2,000 years ago. From a previous life? No, strangely, from this one. Dialogue for scare. 5.168. The moth, which in descending can be viewed as progressively illuminating every sector of the landscape, past, present, and future, simultaneously. Its light is white like moonbeams. It is always getting closer, but it has never arrived, which is to say, touched down at one point only, i.e. at one instant. From fatigue I failed to put down a lot. But the descending moth exhibits in model form how an entity or universe outside time enters one confined by linear time. It is throughout matter, i.e., throughout in the lesser linear universe, as if the whole landscape is light-spattered. It took me over 12 hours to realize that the descending moth, like a hollow Japanese paper lantern, was actually a ship landing, a huge one. This was the ultimate vision for me. This great light-giving ship, identified in the dream only as the moth, which I guess is its individual name. Thus, I am enabled to conceive what up to this point I couldn't conceive, the way the kingdom enters our world, the relationship it has to our world constantly, etc. Those two are the same, how it enters and its constant relationship. It is a constant entering, as the E.B. Macro says, but I couldn't conceive this. Now I can. The maximum linear time entry point has already been fixed, and entry has begun. The loading had begun. We are experiencing or feeling or encountering its effects. As if in the periphery of light spatter on the time landscape, the outskirts of it, but still particles of light, illumination, are falling now. The light was not like sunlight. It was that which I saw light up the bedroom that Sunday night before Pinky died. It was the raising, I think, that night of the veil of limitation on me. This was frightening to me, because I rightly associated it with approaching death. I guess this means that when, as we die, we begin to see what formerly was concealed to us or from us, and the shock is great, since we have all our lives been trading, doing business with evil. The first things seen are negative. And what is worse, we've been part of this negative reality, which, as Tagomi realized, is an actual evil, not merely a viewpoint evil. It is basically self-awareness, self as part of this and now disclosed to a higher eye. It is the ultimate fulfillment of a paranoiac vision. My evil inside is seen. This is universally experienced as the day of wrath, and rightly so. O dreadful day, O wretched me, to be here on this day, etc. There was nothing inappropriate in my reaction. But what is even more amazing was the following morning, when I was unnaturally up and about at 7 a.m. and felt the spirit of 374 back in me again. This time, I asked its name. It said it represented what it called the nameless God, that it itself was the Virgin, but not the Christian Virgin, rather the Roman one, which is Astraea. I looked it up in Virgil. This time, for the first time, she, Astraea, answered my questions as I put them. I was not passive, but active. I asked what they would do as judgment, since Astraea, the Virgin or Virgo, is the immortal of justice. She told me candidly that they would condemn by fire those who have despoiled the earth, and she cited such matters as the defoliation in Vietnam. I was overjoyed to know that the destroyers of earth would themselves suffer fire as judgment. So I tend to be skeptical about this whole experience, viewing it as wish fulfillment rather than truly receptive. Nonetheless, that day my blood pressure, when taken, was normal for the first time. Fantastic proof of the subjective concept at 7 that morning that now everything was okay. The arrival of Virgo that day was certainly to coincide with the blood pressure taking, to help me in what had become a terrifying vital matter. I have throughout the year wondered how in any real sense I could claim or imagine myself as healed when my blood pressure was in fact even more elevated. The spirit returned as a calming spirit, a tranquil spirit of Mat, like balance and harmony. Out of that day's combined experiences, I felt the most intense relief and joy, which is easy to fathom. Now as I write this, I feel it revive in me, a true uprising of joy. I attribute both my physical repair and the psychological state of ease, which the nurse noticed, I experienced as coming directly from heavenly intervention. No shit. Truly, I had faltered, being afraid to go to get the blood pressure reading anymore. But that day, I was changed, and by that adventitious entity which had entered me in 374. And then the next day, I found the Stone Pony LP I longed for so badly. There it was again, reissued after 4 or 5 years. Maybe my letter to Capital helped me do it. Since then, this is a diary now. I've dreamed some precog dreams. Big-breasted Tsarina, broken phono with Tessa trying to fix it, a vast attempt by the Russian nobility to set up shop in another continent, obviously a paradigm for the CP. And then last night, very strange dreams in which I read a book, again large and serious, about economics. The economics of the German Social Democrat movement, started post-World War I. Idea for To Scare the Dead. Dreams, but not about the past, as are the dreams in Peter Proud. Note: the 1975 supernatural film, The Reincarnation of Peter Proud. End note. Rather, they are like the dreams about the approaching Spaniards by the Aztecs, visions of the future, like the moth dream, which is a dream about the arrival of a ship, and SF in style. This was used in Clans somewhat. When Lederer had visions about the ship arriving, precog dreams. The cities he dreams himself in are futuristic, from the next century. Also, my MBS script. Note: Mutual Broadcasting System, an American radio network. End note. Later made into a minor short story, where the guy has a phobia from an event in the future. Why can't I expand on this story idea here? Make a novel use of it. Man who remembers the future rather than the past. The psychiatrist setting even. Autobiographical. Even unto my experience which caused me to summon Mr. Kelly, experiencing disinhibiting stimuli before they arrived, in normal sequence and interval. Beforehand, as mere word and or light signals to us. Now, having read the EB macro article on time, I know that what I saw were events up the manifold ahead before they had entered linear time, before they had popped into existence ahead of us. I saw them in less than time reality, but still in sequence, like the next film reel still in the can, not yet projected. Only as the future enters the present does it get projected into, obviously, this space-time continuum, which we experience. Thus, of course, I saw it reduced to mere words and light signals. It hadn't entered either time or space, only had sequence, didn't look real, substantial. The Minkowski block universe. I verified it without knowing in the slightest what I was experiencing. It's exactly like that time when I was a little kid on the ranch and saw inside the dead hen, saw the eggs, very small and flat, which she was going to lay each day, later on. And maybe this boyhood scene could start to scare the dead.